anyway, folks, it is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 FM Talk. And what a privilege this is. This man has never been on our show for some reason or another. I guess we've never asked you, or you've never been in the area or whatever. But I've always been a big fan. I remember seeing you back at the Improv 1981, 82, and had sort of followed your career through Seinfeld and acting and the writing you've done. Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Miller is with us. Nice to see you, man.
Hey, pal.
Hey. And we're just talking. He was telling me something that was, you know, it's so profound. But in Los Angeles, well, after a certain hour, man.
You know, we're just saying it's so relaxing to be in the studio here.
Right.
Because all radio stations are like the man from Uncle headquarters. You know, it's all, you have to go through three doors, and it's very, very strong security. But once you get in there, you feel completely safe.
Right.
But Los Angeles, as a city, is, at nighttime, instantly creepy. The same neighborhood you've been around 3,500 times at night. Well, there's no one there. It's like the day the earth stood still.
Right.
And you have to, you think, oh, I've got to write on Hauser now. I can't do that. Oh, this is horrible. Oh, where's it going to go? You're in the parking lot,
right,
and everything seems like a shadow at the corner of your eyes. What happens? You get raped. And, oh, no, everyone's going to get shot. And there's no one there. And then once you get inside, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
you have a soda, sit down and chat.
Yeah, enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
We used to be up at, the old station used to be at 3580 Wilshire, which is on the corner of Normandy and Wilshire. Now, during the day, you know, executives are in the building, you know, they're selling insurance, or, you know, the Social Security, you know, was in the building. Everybody was, you know, professional and great during the day. Boom. As soon as that sun goes down, lunatics show up. I don't know where they come from, but I remember doing the show at 11 o'clock, and I only lived two blocks away. I'd take my briefcase, and I'd literally run home, hoping not to get, you know, murdered or robbed.
I do know.
Yeah.
And, I've got one for you. I was in a movie called The Final Season, which is a true story. It's a baseball movie. It was shot outside Cedar Rapids in Iowa in a town called Norway. And it was beautiful. I was there for a month. This is 2 years ago. And it's really, really so shatteringly American. And I mean, there's a town of 500. A train goes by in the background. Great Northern and Western with names on it that sound like you can't see things like this, and the sun and the corn, real corn,
right,
and the baseball, it's all real.
Right.
And it was so moving. It was really such a Norman Rockwell area. But when the sun went down, it instantly became horrifying. If there was a day shooting was going late, and by the way, I was working with actors you would also know, people would know a second if they saw him, Dayton Kelly, who became a good friend, who was in Deadwood, and Marshall Bell has been in a thousand things. People you'd know. Well,
right,
like me, the character actors.
Right.
And by the way, I define character actor as anyone in the movie not kissing Renee Zellweger. So that's a clue to people. If you're in a movie, if it comes up and you're there for the first 2 or 3 weeks and you're not kissing,
right,
her
character,
you're a character actor. So you should just go in the trailer and say, "How do you like that? I'm a character actor."
Right. Yeah.
But we would be in the same. We staying. It was a great time, and we'd sing at the hotel, and we would drive back and forth. We had rental cars, and if the sun went down, though,
right,
the three of us, three grown men. People in Westerns, again, like Deadwood, tough guys.
Right.
Really. But everyone was saying, just go faster, because the corn was up against the road, and you really thought it was going to part, and kids with their arms held out were going to walk through it. Every house looked like the Clutter House, you know, if it's like 200 yards off the road. It just really, really, ugh.
Yeah, like during the day, you guys would walk through the corn and think nothing of it.
Oh, the next day, again, it just almost fills your eyes with tears, because it's so moving, because it's the heartland, the farmland, and again, the trains go by with the school, and there's the high school, the 500 people,
right,
and the church thing with this, and but that sun went down, you said, oh man, oh, this is not okay, and it's 30 miles from Cedar Rapids on a road without lights. No, this is not right. We got to get out of here.
It's like being in a foreign country when the sun goes down.
No, it was like being on Outland, like with Sean Connery, like on some moon of Jupiter.
But you know, it's sort of like, and again, Larry Miller's with us, it's sort of like your backyard. You know, if you have a backyard during the day, you'll do anything in it. You know, you walk around your backyard, you enjoy yourself. It doesn't matter what noises you hear, whatever. But at night, you won't step outside into your backyard because you hear something and it flips you out.
By the way, this is there's the old pioneer spirit, huh? Look how rugged we are. Your own backyard. And it's the truth, though.
But it reminds it's you true. Of being a child. Remember, I bet you did this. Well, I also did this. But when I was a kid and I was scared at home, I would leave the TV on because I knew somebody was talking. Or I'd stay up until the sun came up. And then as soon as the sun came up, you know, you were clear.
And it's so funny. That's how you wind up being a performer and living a creative life. You do the dumbest things. Things right. In retrospect that you didn't have to do that. Regular right. People don't do that.
Right.
Don't turn on the TV and stay up all night. See, parents right. Come home and say, what's wrong with them? Maybe military school would be good. By the way, I have a manager and a publicist listening right now, and we haven't said this yet, so I just want to say it for them, because they're right, that we should do this. I'm going to be at the Improv Thursday night. It's one show, 8 o'clock, and so I want to make sure I mention that so we can...
Yeah, 8 o'clock, the Improv on Melrose.
Yes.
The original Improv.
That's exactly correct. And now let's go back to...
All right, so 8 o'clock on Thursday, and who is... you do an hour and a half or so? Two hours?
No, that'll be about...
Listen, if Larry does less than 3 hours on Thursday, you get ripped off. I've seen him perform. He does three great hours.
Two laughs, by the way, but three great hours. Very pleasant, other than that. It's not actual laughter.
Right.
No, it would actually just be about 45 minutes to an hour Thursday night.
Excellent.
Whatever but I'm pretty malleable, whatever they like. Because I love stand-up again. I mentioned this before we started getting on the air. I love acting and writing, and I love it very much. But I hadn't been a real comic for years. And I have other friends. I was never trying to get out of it, but it finally hit me. I have a book out now called Spoiled Rotten America that every word I wrote, every script, you realize, you say to yourself, well, these things feel as if they could be said out loud.
Right.
I wonder if there were a form in show business where I could write things and speak them out loud.
Yeah, I wonder where that would be.
When people could be facing the same direction.
Right.
I wonder what that could be. Yeah. And I finally...
Crowded into tables where if there was ever a fire, everybody would die.
That's right. We used to call those in some of the clubs that we started out, we used to call them the dental chart seats. Because in case of a fire, the only way they'd be able to recognize those people is from their dental charts. Because it would be like flash paper. Some of those clubs would go up just...
Yeah, no, exactly. I don't know how, and to try to be at, you know, and I'm not talking about just the Improv, but all of these clubs, if you're sitting in a seat, we go, oh Christ, I gotta take a leak. It's, excuse me, to 17 guys, and really rude to the comic who's up there.
Oh sure, and by the way, they used to have, it's so funny, cause obviously New York is different from California, every state is different from every state, but also the way people live are, they used to have fire inspectors come into the clubs in New York, with the purple face and the hat on, with the badge on it.
Right.
Not the uniform on.
While you're performing?
The hat with the badge. No, into the outer area of the club.
Oh, right.
And,
right.
You know, giant red face with the hat tipped back, you know, like kind of to the side.
Right.
Yeah, I got to take a look for the, make sure the wiring. And they used to take them up on the side and go, oh, well, really? You know, it's good to see you because we want to make sure that, can we get a little taste so we can get a drink for Bill here? All right, you know, look, I hate to hassle you guys. Hey, I got a couple of kids in school myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? So, and then they took care of, he'd have 10 guys under him.
Right.
So they all would get, and to me, that never bothered me.
But I think isn't that the way with every inspector on every level? Like when you're a restaurant inspector, don't you go in and you could find bugs in any restaurant?
Of course.
But the guy gives you a sandwich, he gives you a check, you know.
Well, the difference is, at least as I remember growing in these clubs in New York, they would put chairs on the stage if they could. You remember that you were talking about now that the tables are like from Casablanca, they're tiny little tables, and they would sell every inch of that place,
right.
Which would go up again in case if someone coughed too loud, it would spontaneously combust. And here, though, and everybody was kind of getting along. Sure, we'll give you. Every place was a little dangerous, but they were in good shape. But the first time I started working then here in Southern California, and nice clubs too, and the inspectors would come in, and they weren't kidding around. And if there was one extra person on a Saturday night, and there was like 286 people instead of 285 in the count, they would say, show's over. That's it.
And yeah, they're really strict out here, man.
Listen, I'm sorry, we really weren't trying to do anything.
Right.
And they said, hey, buddy, show's over. Oh, I see. It's just, you know, those just faces looking right back at you going, you're kind of kidding, right? No. Well, we have people working here. Show's over. Oh, okay.
Show's over.
Everybody's out for the night, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I've heard there's legendary stories of, you know, when you're back in New York in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you get pulled over by a cop, you know, used to take a paperclip on your license and paperclip a $100 bill behind your license, show them your license, the license would come back without the $100 bill, and you'd say, you know, have a good day. You try that out here in L.A., and they'll hogtie you and beat you half, you know, to death.
And that's by the way, that's by way of saying thank you.
Right.
But do you know what? You just reminded me of this. Wallace, who's a friend of the comic, George Wallace is a great comic, you may know, and he told me, I can't do things like that, see. I can't.
Oh, I've never been able to. Yeah.
I can't. I couldn't be a poker player. I can't. I have no way of performing in real life. I can't be an actor or a comic in real life. I have no sense of irony. I have never known when I'm being teased. Friends, for years, other comics would say something, and I'd say, that sounds familiar. What is that? It's your act, you idiot. It's you're a moron. You've said it 3,300 times. And Wallace said to me once, so this is when we were all flying around a lot, as you said, in the 80s when people started being comic, working on the road a lot.
Right.
And he said, so in those days, you could fly. He said to fly first class if you want to upgrade to first class. Instead of using the stickers they all had, so it would be like an extra 60 or 80 bucks or something.
Right.
He said, what you do is, when they call the flight, go up to the guy as he's standing there at the little counter, and you hand him your ticket, but put a $20 or $50 bill in there with the ticket.
Right.
And just say to him, excuse me, I'm just wondering, do you have any first class, any extra first class?
Right.
Now, Wallace could sell anything. What's the old saying? He could sell shoe polish in a nudist camp. This guy could do anything.
Right.
We used to call him the host of life. He's just exuberant. He can do anything. I can't.
Right.
And this idiot, I'm the idiot. He talked me into it. And one time on a road trip, I went up at Kennedy Airport, and I went up to the guy, and I'm really sweating bullets. I can't do this. And my eyes are not only staring off, but vibrating in tiny circles.
Right.
I just can't do it. And I handed the guy the ticket holder, and with, just as Wallace said, and I had a $50 bill just sticking up from it, and I just said, excuse me, I'm just wondering if you have any seats in first class or anything available. And he looked at it, and I don't know if it was the one guy or I'm just so bad at it.
Right.
He might have taken it from 100 other people before me, but he looked at me and said, is there money sticking out of that envelope, sir? And I said, oh, boy. And he just said, excuse me, if you're trying to give me that money to give you a seat, I think I just got over it last week. Oh, I mean, I just was so traumatized. I went back to Wallace. I said, you know something? I ought to kill you. I ought to strangle you right now.
Well, but you know what? I actually, Larry Miller is with us, by the way. He's going to be at the Improv 8 p.m. on Thursday, this Thursday on Melrose there. I went to Santa Anita during Breeders' Cup. It was there about 4 years ago. And Breeders' Cup, there's 70,000 people there. So I pull up, and parking was $10. Valet parking was closed. And so I said to the guy, I said, hey, I like, you know, I'm going to park up front. I said to my friend, I'm going to park up front. He goes, how are you going to do it? I said, well, I'm going to slide this guy at 20. I'm going to drive by him. So I give him a 20, put him under my thumb, slide to him, and said, Merry Christmas, and kept driving. He goes, hey. I go, what? He goes, we don't do that here. I go, we don't do what here? He goes, you just gave me a 20 for parking. I said, sir, I said, do you realize that you could be standing on the same square of cement where this move was born? That's where this move was born, at the racetrack. You might be standing where the first guy ever has done that. And you're saying we don't do that here? Get the Christ out of here. And I move on. But it also happened at Dodger Stadium.
That was pretty good, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, you gotta really.
So you can do this.
Oh, yeah. You have to do this.
Well, I don't have to because I can't.
Well, you could. I mean, you just, the key is, and I learned this from my dad, bribe and move. Bribe and move, but never stick around. At Dodger Stadium, I met with Jack Silver, the program director.
By the way,
that's
on the door of the police car, in quotes.
Right.
That's the motto.
Bribe and move. It's like when you're stuck in a conversation with somebody at a party, you don't know how to get out, compliment and leave. That's the move. You got some funny ass there, and move on. Compliment and leave. But we were at Dodger Stadium.
You know, that's pretty good, too.
Thank you very much. My dad taught me that as well. And I'm there with Jack Silver, the program director, and he's driving. And he's like you. He can't do this. He can't give a guy a 10 and move on. So he sees a guy there, and I said, slide him the 10, say Merry Christmas, and keep driving. Don't stop. So he gives him the 10, and he stops. Now, his boss is standing behind him about 20 feet. And Jack says to the parking attendant, he goes, is that enough? And the kid goes, is that enough what? He goes, that 10 I gave you. And I go, Jack, you're going to get this guy fired.
Jesus Christ.
You got to move on here. You just give the guy the money and move on. You don't turn around. Some people are like, you know, he is like that, though. He can't do it.
I've got one for you. Richie Tinkin was one of the owners of the comic strip and wound up also then managing Eddie Murphy for like 12, 15 years. You know, they came into the comic strip in those first gigantic years. And Richie was always a great guy. And he went to Las Vegas to, they're from New York, the old bar owners from New York. And he went to Las Vegas and he gave the guy $20. They went to see a show. And the guy at that time, so this would have been, yeah, I guess 83, 85 or something like that. He moved him right up front, right to the table up front.
Right.
Richie didn't want to sit up front. So we called the guy back, you know, before they got their drinks and said, look, do me a favor. And he slipped him another 20. He said, could just not so far up. Could we sit a little further back? He said, absolutely. So he takes him to the end of that first row of the long tables there. But there's still, it's right in the lights, right in front of everybody. Right. So Richie said, he called him back a third time and gave him a 20 and said, no, can we just get a little farther back? And he just said, buddy, for 50, I can get you out of here. And I thought that was so great.
Yeah, that's where, again, where that move was born, Vegas.
I guess,
you
know, so.
You can throw money at anything in Vegas.
But I don't have that gear. I think I could act it. I think I could be in a part in
right.
it.
Yeah.
So again, it's like actors. You can be a lawyer or a doctor as an actor.
Well, but see,
I don't understand these things.
Right. But life is all about, you know, throwing money at a problem or juice, you know? Like, what is the, Gina, what is the resort where you have little beads? Is it Sandals, where you pay for everything with little beads?
Yeah, that's Sandals.
Is it Sandals?
Wait a minute.
Is that right?
I think that's Mardi Gras.
Like hedonism?
Yeah, like hedonism.
Yeah,
right.
Hedonism.
And I had a friend who went down to hedonism, and you pay like $1,000 or $2,000 a week, and they give you beads. And you pay for everything with a bead. You know, you pay for a drink, your meal, you give them one bead, right?
Oh.
But you can't give them two because the beads don't mean anything to the employees. So he's stuck there for a week with no juice. He can't bribe anybody because money's no good there. You have no money. You just have stupid beads. So he was treated like everybody else for a week, and this is like a high-rolling guy. But that's why you need money. You need to throw money at some problems.
Again, there's some people who can do this and not do it. You can. Wallace can.
Right.
I can't do it. I can't roll past someone. I would be like Jack. Say, hi, is that okay? And everyone around in the area would look at me saying, what are you doing? Excuse me, sir. Is that $10? I just can't.
All right, folks. Larry Miller is with us, and we promised the listeners we'd do this, so maybe Larry will chime in on this. But this is your last-ditch effort to make a pitch for either Obama, McCain, Proposition 8, Proposition 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. Whatever you're voting for tomorrow, maybe you worked on a campaign, maybe you're just passionate about it. But your last-ditch effort before the voting starts tomorrow morning to make any kind of plea for us to vote your direction or the way you're voting. Here are the phone numbers. 520-9710. That's 520-9710. And 888-520-9710. Now, this election year or 2 years has been great for comedians.
As soon as you said 2 years, that's my whole point. I don't do political stuff because, first of all, I like everyone in the room to feel completely at home. As soon as the lights go down,
right.
I want everyone to say, I'm part of this room and I like talking about these things.
Right. And if you start alienating people,
it's just not my way of performing. I don't like that. Plus, it's just amazing to me. I keep thinking, especially tonight, if we could only keep the campaign going, what about another 3.5 years? Because I'd like to actually blow my brains out. I think this is one of the reasons, frankly, it's gotten so angry and contentious. If you put anything in front of us as a country, the whole country, every single hour of every single day, all these years.
Right.
I mean, if there's one thing we can be certain of, on Wednesday morning, the 5th, Wednesday the 5th,
right.
The day after the election,
right.
It'll be the start of the next campaign.
Oh, exactly, right.
And for 2012, and you want to say, have we lost our minds if they had done none of this?
Right.
Because it's not just a cottage industry, it's an industry. People have to move to Iowa for 2.5 years and shake hands with everyone and go to every living room.
Right.
And you want to say, you know what, we could have done this in a month.
Exactly.
We could have done this in a month if you have one guy. If you, it's so obvious. It's gonna be 51-49 one way or the other because it always is.
Right.
And if you feel more comfortable a little left of center, you'll vote for one guy. If you feel a little more comfortable right of center, you'll vote for the other guy. And you know what? That's it. We don't have to do this. We can go back to arguing about the important stuff like Little League.
Right.
Really hating us over something important.
Well, I mean, here's a perfect example of how we get too caught up in this. Barack Obama hired a really powerful, aggressive, successful campaign manager in the state of Nevada. And his name is Terrence Tolbert. And he's 44 years old. So he's, and he's a young man, because anybody younger than me is a young man. He's 44 years old. He's got Barack Obama in the state of Nevada, which outside of Vegas and Reno and Tahoe is gun-toting, crazy people who live in the desert. And he's got this state at 51-44 for Obama. And he gets up today, he's got the news, all the stories are coming out, bang, has a heart attack and dies. So this guy who's fought for Obama for the last 2 years in Nevada, sent out to Nevada specifically to run his campaign, died of a massive heart attack this morning. 44 years old.
And that's just horrifying.
Yeah, but that's how these people are way too into this. Nobody at 44 should be dying of a massive heart attack. But it seems like that's happening more and more.
If you're in Las Vegas and you're going to die of a heart attack, it more or less has to be with a hooker, doesn't it?
Yeah, either
shouldn't
a hooker, or it's got to be you have your life savings or the family savings on the line.
That's right. Or you just blow it and you just, all right, then pass out. But not because,
on a campaign.
Again, I've had it. I think I left. Seriously, 5 months ago or a year and a half ago, I just can't take it. Every time you turn on the news, I can't. I can't do it. If the election were held today, and I always want to say, but it's not. It's not being held today. What's wrong with you?
Right.
It's not. No one. I don't care. If it were held today, well, sure, and if this classic thing, and if pigs could fly.
Right.
But it's not held today.
Yeah. It is going to be held today, tomorrow, but tomorrow will be today.
And then Wednesday we can say, if the election were held yesterday,
right?
I've just had it. But anyway, maybe people want to call in.
All right, here are the phone numbers. Again, if you want to, you're pro-8, you're anti-8, you're pro-gay marriage, you're anti-gay marriage, perhaps you love Obama and you hate McCain, or vice versa. Maybe you love Sarah Palin and hate Joe Biden. Your last-ditch effort to try to convince us to vote the way you are voting. Here are the phone numbers, 520-9710. That's our main number here in Southern California, 520-9710, and 888-520-9710. Now, if Barack Obama, or when Barack Obama becomes president, I think he's got a lock on this. I mean, every single poll for the last, since the Republican convention, about a week after that, every single poll has him up. In California, he's up by 27 points in one poll. 27 points in one poll, which would be the biggest landslide in perhaps the history of California. But if Barack Obama gets in there, it's going to be very difficult for a lot of these late night, talk shows, like Letterman and Leno and, Colbert and whoever else is on Comedy Central to do material on Barack Obama. They haven't been able to find any material.
You know something? But that's why I don't do it. I think there'll always be comedy. There's always something to be funny on. I really think people have gotten too wrapped up in it. And to me, the funny part of, if there's anything funny about politics, it's the thing that everyone feels the same. For instance, and to me, I wrote something about the economy because after these guys, after the banks exploded, or I had no idea what they were talking about. I realized I have no idea what economics is.
Right.
When they explain it and they're both running away from it, both sides were just running away, and no one's going to stand up and say, here's what happened, because we're very forgiving people. I'll forgive someone.
Oh,
if
yeah.
They say,
yeah.
Well, we did this and this is wrong.
Right.
But no one would do that. And the only thing way I could make sense of it was this. And here's my explanation. The only way I can make sense of this. I would like a Ferrari.
Right.
I cannot afford a Ferrari. Therefore, I won't get one. Now, I know that people out there hearing that saying, whoa, wait a minute, that's crazy talk, Larry. Well, let's just take it again.
Right.
In parts, I would like a Ferrari.
Right.
I cannot afford a Ferrari, therefore, right. And here comes the crazy part, I won't get one. As near as I can figure it, in Washington they say, right. We would like a Ferrari, we cannot afford a Ferrari,
right.
Therefore we'll take the red one.
Right, exactly.
In fact, we'll take 535 of them. That would right. be really neat.
And there was a lot of incentive for people to do that exact thing with these low-interest mortgage rates. And do you remember back in like, 2002, 2003, up until I think early 2005, where they give a loan to anybody for a house? You know, if you walked in, you didn't have to state income, they didn't check your credit. They just give you a loan for a house. And a lot of these people who didn't have the money to buy a house bought a house. And now that's going away.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Someone is going to want you to, now this is an antique thought, but is going to want you to pay for it.
Right.
But I have no patience.
Well, it's like there's a reason why when you're on welfare, you can't use your welfare certificates or your welfare, I don't know what they call them, vouchers. You can't use those for cigarettes and beer because those are reserved for people who are working.
I just think that I've always given, I give dough to anybody, someone outside the 7-Eleven because of that reason, though. I'll say, I don't care if they're going to buy cigarettes or beer for
you. Yeah, I don't
either. I think, you know what, if that's, I'm doing fine, and you know what, if you want, a six-pack of beer, go ahead, that's fine. If that's going to, make you relax, have a nice afternoon, good, go ahead.
Yeah.
Instead of, no, I'll buy you a sandwich, but no pints of brandy for you. No, if the guy wants a pint of brandy, let him get a pint. Give him a couple of bucks and shut up.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean, if you're on the streets, you want to be buzzed because, when you drink, the only reason to drink is to leave reality. And reality for homeless people sucks. So you want to be buzzed, either on, weed or a little coke, maybe a little, meth or some booze to just relax for a couple hours.
I know, I always love when people say, you're not helping him. And I always want to say, I think, well, I know that. I'm not doing this to help him. I'm trying to help me. I want him to get out of the way so I can get in the store. I'm going to Ralph's here. I'll sign anything. Yes. Would you like to? Yes, absolutely. Here. Bill Johnson. Here, I'll sign that. Where do you live? Where do you want me to live? I don't care. Just get out of the way. I need some milk.
Here's something that probably never happened. When a guy has one of those signs, I'm just hungry. I need some food. And you buy him a six-pack. He's like, no. I'm really hungry. I don't think that's ever happened.
Oh, that's all right, pal. You don't have to kid me. No, I'm just saying. I'm just some Fritos is good.
Yeah, I'm really buzzed already. I just need some food. I need some. No. I understand.
I think you want a bottle of Jameson's. No, I don't. I would just maybe a cheese sandwich. No. Here's some cherry brandy.
Yeah, arguing the guy. Now, do you, I'll do this, and it comes out of, the worst part of me, but I know there's a 7-Eleven in the Valley that there's always two or three homeless guys that I got to try to fight through to get in. And you've got to always, you feel like an a-hole because the guy says, you got a quarter on you. And you pull up in a nice car, and obviously you got a quarter on you. And you got to tell him no without sounding like an a-hole. So you got a quarter on you. Maybe on the way out. That's always everybody's move.
That's so often. Then you go in and say, "Excuse me, is there a window in the bathroom? I want to climb out. I'd rather land on a dumpster than have to walk past that guy.
Right.
Give him two bits. Excuse me, do you have a quarter?
Yeah, can I just stay here overnight or stay here until that guy leaves? All right, we got to take a break here. Larry Miller is with us. If you'd like to see him live, and it's a great show, Thursday, 8 p.m. at the Improv. Thursday, 8 p.m. at the Improv. And that is on Melrose, just a little bit east of La Cienega. It's a great club. Bud Friedman's still there? He still owns that place, huh?
He's around. He and Mark Lano used to own it, and it's owned by Bud. But Bud is a constant, and so is Mark. They're really a fixture. They'll always be part of Improv lore.
Yeah.
Even though it they may have sold it off, and they're off water skiing now.
Yeah, I ran into Bud Friedman about 4 or 5 months ago. And every time I run into him, he says, hey, he goes, didn't I give you great advice back in 1980? And I said, yes, you did, bud. And his advice to me was, never do stand-up, young man.
Jesus Christ.
All right, Larry Miller is with us. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 FM.
The 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 FM Talk. And Larry Miller is with us. Always nice to see you.
Same
and
here,
I've been
pal.
A big, big fan for a long, long time. And I can't say that about a lot of comics, but I remember seeing you in the 80s, 90s in the improv, and then you took a little break for a while in movies, writing, and then back to stand-up now.
That's right.
Look
and,
at you.
By the way, I'm also in something that it's worth mentioning. Just opened up Friday called The Other End of the Line, and it's playing all over the country, but not at a theater near you.
Right.
This is in select theaters. They all have their own euphemism. That means it's about 300 theaters around the country, but so it's like three or four in the area here.
Right. You got to drive.
But it was great. It was shot in India. It was great to be there for a month.
Excellent.
Hey,
we were talking about homeless guys during the break, and I ran into a homeless guy who had, he was on La Brea and San Vicente. Man, this guy at the Arco had some spirit. He was happy, asked for a couple bucks. I was initially hesitant, and I gave him a couple bucks. He said he's working at May Company. He's trying to get, you know, he had a couple of jokes he laid on me. I mean, this guy was on the streets and still had a better spirit and a better outlook and a more positive attitude than I did.
That's why I was just telling Tim in the break, and I didn't tell him these two because it came to mind about someone having spirit. There were two times I got the biggest kick out of this. One was a guy jumped in front of me. Yeah, and he was almost all raggy and a little crazy. And he jumped in front on the sidewalk and just, with a big smile, said, "Hey, you don't have to be a Rockefeller to help a fella." And I looked at him and I said, "You know what? That is a great show." And I gave him whatever I had, like 10, 20 bucks or something. And I said, "That's a great line.
Right.
Good for you. That's his act."
Right.
And there was one other guy. I thought that was terrific. And then was another guy on an exit ramp with plenty of place to pull over. Off of the 101 or some, you know, yeah, it was the 101. And he had a sign that said, "I absolutely need $350,000 before 4 o'clock today." And it said on the sign, and I thought that was so witty, picking those numbers.
Right.
"I need $350,000 by 4 o'clock today."
Right.
You know what? I thought, and I pulled the same thing. I pulled over, I gave him whatever I had. I said, "That is so funny."
Yeah, oh, that's great. I saw a guy the other day that said, you know, I asked him how old he was. He's on the off ramp of Tampa and Ventura. And I said, "How old are you?" And he says, "I'm 34. I said, "All right, your sign says you're a Vietnam vet. Have you looked up any of the American history?" He says, "No, but this sign works for a lot of guys."
Mm-hmm. You know what? By the way, that's actually a cool answer, because you know what? You want to say, "Yeah, I'm not sure the Ho Chi Minh Trail was kind of closed by the time, you know, your father was in junior high."
It was all wrapped up.
It was about it, but that's a very honest answer.
Yeah,
that's the same thing. If someone's funny, well, it's like us. If you have an act, you have an ability. That's why I dug those lines so much. Hey, you don't have to be a Rockefeller to help a fella. By the way, I hope by saying that on the air now, I haven't ruined that guy's act. Now there's going to be 50 other guys. "Hey, that's my line."
Yeah, it's like, you know, how sometimes you accuse, you know, people accuse comics of stealing their jokes. It'll be now that way in the homeless world. It's like, "Hey, wait a minute. That's my line." He goes, "No, I heard the Larry Miller talk about it."
There'll be 10 guys in a row with signs. "I need $300,000. I need $200,000. I need $1 million before 3 o'clock.
All right, go see Larry Miller Thursday, 8 p.m. at the Improv. And you may want to get there early because, you know, if Larry's up on stage, there's a lot of fans. And he's going to sell out. So get there around noon at the Improv.
In fact, you know what? You're late now.
Yeah. But great food there, too. They sell good food there?
They do.
Yeah. I like that food there.
They always, you know what? I like bar food, club food. Even, by the way, I've been in a bunch of movies, and even on the ones that said, where people said, "Oh, the catering's no good here if you're on location or something, like New Mexico. Oh, it's a bad caterer." And I always thought, gee, I thought it was pretty good.
No, in the same
it's
way.
It's all free. It's giant mountains of food.
Right. Well, it's like when I take a cup of coffee out here, they make coffee at odd times at night, and I'll take a cup of coffee and I'll drink it, and the guy next to me will take a sip and goes, "Oh, dude, was this made, you know, Friday of last week?" I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know whether it's made Friday last week or it made 3 minutes ago. I don't have the taste buds to tell them." It's like guys with wine, too. It's like, "Oh, I know where this comes from."
You know what? I've never, and I have, by the way, one of the publicist is a friend, Hanson, is listening to this now, and he always gets me, for my birthday, he gets a beautiful bottle of whiskey, like a great bottle of Scotch, whatever he's going to, and it's And you know what? I don't have the taste. Or like wine. I like right up the middle stuff.
Right.
You know, if a bottle of $11 wine is terrific to me. My wife can tell the difference.
Right. Well, the program director here, Jack Silver, gives everybody a bottle of wine. I think he gets it for free. But he gets everybody a bottle of wine for Christmas. And I said to him occasionally, I said, Jack, I said, we've known each other for 12 years or so. Have you ever seen me drink wine or heard me talk about wine?
Can't we all just get a bong?
He says, no. I said, I haven't had a glass of wine since I was 15. Because that was the first alcohol that I got drunk on.
Oh, and they always say the one you get sick on first you don't like?
I got wiped out on it. And so I haven't had a glass of wine since I was 15.
That was true for me through my 20s. But like at 30, I said, "Ah, I can drink that."
Right.
You know, whatever it was. In fact, it was scotch.
Right, you're right back on it.
It was Jamie Scotch. I thought, "No, I can't drink scotch because I threw up everything in my body on it."
Right.
And, but then, yeah, by around 32, you think, "Ah, it's okay. I can drink that too."
All right, let's take some phone calls here. If you want us to vote the way you're voting on these propositions or President and Vice President of the United States, 520-9710. Let's talk to Jennifer in Torrance. You're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Good.
All right. What
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Hi. Sorry, I'm nervous.
That's all right. What do you got going?
Oh, I just wanted to tell everyone, please, please, please vote no on Prop 8. If you don't, you're a total freaking idiot. I think that you should be, I don't know, I mean, maybe dragged out into the street and executed.
Wow.
If you vote yes, because I think you're just stupid, and you should vote no, 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 no on Prop 8.
Okay, no on Prop 8.
No on Prop 8.
Jennifer, how old are you?
I am 27.
27. All right, what do you do for a living?
I work at a store.
Retail?
Yeah.
Okay. have you ever worked in radio?
No.
You don't currently work in radio?
I work at a store.
where's Gina Gren?
She's not in the screener's booth?
Gina?
Where is she?
I bought that.
Gina?
What?
What are you doing?
I don't know. You said call if you want to give a last-ditch effort, you know, talk about your proposition. So I called.
I know. That's a real low level, baby.
You know what? That was really good. I bought that.
Thank you. See, Mr. Miller appreciated it. I just wanted to voice my opinion, too, you know?
Yeah.
God, it's like
didn't you think I would, recognize your voice?
Well, you know, I'm a pretty good voice impersonator, Tim. I thought that I had that one locked and loaded.
All right.
That was, this is my first time on the show. I was listening. I thought, wow, she had a little to it. It sounded like a person.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes, Gina, you know, you just, listen, I adore you, but, to sit there and try to BS us.
Look, Tim, I called in.
I understand,
you know?
but darling, I'm telling you, when it's that outrageous, you know, just put your mic on and tell us. You have to go to the other studio.
I was just following orders.
All right, but please, Jesus Christ Almighty.
That, by the way, that was funny. Almighty. I just remembered there was a slight pause before she said the word store. She said, well, I work in a store. And then come to think of it, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, you work at a store.
How old are you? Beat. 27? Really?
Tim, what the hell is she thinking to fake call in?
I don't know. I think she's nervous it's going to pass. Jimmy in Highland Park, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, dude.
Hey, I just want to let you know that people that are on welfare, they could buy cigarettes and beer. What they do now is they give them like a little debit card instead of having them hassle to go cash a check or whatever.
Yeah, but I still think that it comes up as a no sale. I don't think you can go in with your welfare debit card and just buy cigarettes and beer.
Yeah, you could. The lady in front of me was last week, matter of fact. She was there with her three kids. They were all dressed all like if they had pulled the clothes out of the trash can, and she was all dressed all nice and stuff. Uh-huh. And she had her stuff, and then she had her six pack after.
I'll take your word for it. Do you gamble at all, Larry?
No, it's still just a crazy dream. Right. I'd like to. I'm not that. When I've worked in Las Vegas or I go down, I'll always go to a crap table and play a little bit, but I have nothing against it, but I just don't really get it. Once I was working at an Indian casino, and I figured, well, I'm in the casino. It was after the show.
Right.
And I figured, well, I might as well. It's a casino. So I went to a blackjack table, And, you know, you can lose like $50 in...
Instantly.
Yeah, like 40 seconds.
Right.
You know, like a half a minute, you just suddenly, and they're so fast. And I lost $50, like $5 a hand. And I'm not cheap. I spend money on anything. I throw away everything I have. But after the $50, I just looked at the dealer and I just said to myself, well, congratulations, Dr. IQ. You've done it again. You know, that could have been a dinner. You know,
oh, yeah, right. That's $50. You start doing that math, right.
And what have I done?
Right.
What have I felt now?
Right.
What have I just accomplished? Now, I know people want to spend, they can spend 10 hours there.
Oh, yeah.
Or at the slot machines, you know. And look, good luck. Congratulations. But I would, you know, if it doesn't involve drinking or like an old movie channel, you know, in a hotel, past that, I mean, I'm either performing or I'm, you know, turning on the TV.
Excellent. Speaking of, you know, ordering movies or watching movies and drinking, Ray Romano said something. You're friends with Ray Romano, right?
Yeah.
He said something I heard on the radio the other day. He said he was in, he had two kids or three kids. I guess he's got triplets or twins or whatever. And he said he was in New York for the first time and, alone. And he said, well, I'm going to watch the, adult movie channel. And, he says, wow, look at that. You can buy a whole, 24-hour block of them for, $18 or so. So he hits, buy the block of porn, and that blocked his porn. So now he's got to call the front desk to unblock it. And he calls the front desk, and the lady says, yes, Mr. Romano, can we help you?
It's just...
He's like, no, I'm okay.
No, everything's fine. Just wanted to say what a nice place you have.
That's gotta be the worst. Guys getting away for the first time ever, you know?
Actually, and by the way, it's in this book I have it that I wrote, a story like that. Everyone has a story like that, especially comics, because we're on the road so much.
Right.
And by the way, the book is called Spoiled Rotten America. It's doing great, and it's out now in paperback.
Excellent.
But that... I was in all alone, and I was a similar thing. I wanted to put on, you know, and I'm not a prude, by the way. I've seen plenty of porn, you know, and plenty of magazines, everything. Everyone has.
Right.
And who wouldn't look at it? If you're walking past someone's desk and there's a naked woman
in
a magazine, you'll say, oh, hiya, Bob, what's that? So, I mean, I'm not an idiot, but so I put on this, I'm flipping around, and I just couldn't watch. You know, another rerun of something. So I said, well, what the heck? You know, I'm all alone. I'm here for one night. I turn on the thing. I pick, and it doesn't matter what the titles are. As you know, they're usually, by the way, very witty. There's some very witty titles, you know.
Right, but the point, yeah, right.
And so I put one on, and the truth is, and again, I'm not an idiot. I'm like any other guy. I'm a human. But, you know, so after you're just watching, and all I could, like 4 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever it is, and I just felt so bad for the people on the screen. I was so embarrassed, and I said, you know what, that's it, I'll turn it off. And because I was there only one night, the next day when I checked out, and the woman behind the desk was a young girl, like a college student, she said something nice to me. I said, oh, that's awfully nice, thanks. But because I'm only there one night, the room and the tax and the food was paid for by someone. They never put the name of anything on there, but it might have screamed. You might as well have screamed. There's only one item in the middle of the paper, and it said, in-room entertainment, $13.99. Now, there's nothing in a hotel that costs $13.99 except porn. It can't be anything else. A regular movie is $8.99. It's like some sort of Planck's constant of porn. It's $13.99 wherever you go. It can't be anything else. And she looked at it when she handed it to me, and she knew.
Right.
And I knew. And I started to actually say, you know, I felt bad for them, and I turned it right off. But I couldn't. And after saying something nice, whatever the compliment was, and she looked at me, and I said, I'm so sorry. And I just left. I was just mortified.
Well, even like, you know, in 2008, when you go buy condoms, you still do that shuffle to the register and try to find an old man at the register. You know, you want to find a young woman sitting there because you're not going to buy them. I mean, we go back to, you know, junior high when it comes to crap like that.
I'll tell you this quick. There's an old joke. This is not my joke, by the way, but it's a wonderful American observation. And I wish I knew who to credit on this, but it's not mine that... years ago, the joke went that you'd go into a drugstore and just say, give me a pack of cigarettes and some condoms. And that today you walk in and say, yeah, give me some condoms and some cigarettes.
All right, Larry Miller is with us, folks. Buy the book, Spoiled Rotten America and the Outrages of Everyday Life. On hardcover on Amazon. Go buy the book and also go see Larry Miller, Thursday, 8 p.m. at the Improv on Melrose. Thursday, 8 p.m. at the the Improv Melrose. Anyway, thanks for coming by.
Well, it's
Larry
it's a
Miller. They, please come back as often as you can.
You've got a deal. This is fun.
Excellent. All right, this is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. John and Jeff coming up next. We're live on 97.1 FM Talk.
FM Talk.